Okay, 30 minutes to talk about digital preservation. Not too easy. We've already had a. Can you hear okay? Yep, cool. We've already had a couple of components of digital preservation in the Oxford presentation and in the Stanford presentation. And I'd like to sort of take a slightly different tack and maybe build on something that Ben said in his presentation, which is around he's talking about how we sustain our digital collections, how we sustain our online collections into the future. And I think what I'd like to maybe concentrate on in this conversation today is this notion that digital preservation is, in fact, a contract with the future. And what we have to try and think about when we're doing digital preservation is how do we maintain a link between what we're trying to achieve now and 100, 150, 200 years down the track when other people are looking at the work that we've done and saying whether or not we've actually done a good job in bringing those objects through into the future for researchers and genealogists and whatever other kinds of processes. So I'm going to concentrate more on what I think is less a technological problem than a social, cultural, and maybe psychological problem of digital preservation. A little bit of background. 2003, National Library had its legislation revised to give it legal deposit. So we had been doing some work on digital preservation before that, but it would be mostly it was playtime, it was research type activity. With the legislation, it became our responsibility to collect and protect the digital output of New Zealand as a country. In 2005, the government produced a national digital strategy in which one of the key components was the sustainability. So the government realized that not only in the cultural and heritage sector from the National Library's perspective, but at a national level, there is a real lack of focus and understanding of what's required to take digital memory, our cultural memory, our scientific memory, any kind of memory forwards into the future. We also have a very close relationship with Sun Microsystems, and in 2004 we were awarded Sun Centre of Excellence status, which was really extremely beneficial to us, primarily from the ability to have access to the intellectual resources of Sun. New Zealand's a small country, the National Library of New Zealand's a small organisation. There were a lot of things that we wanted to do when we started to think about digital preservation that we didn't have the people resources that we needed. So the real benefit of the Centre of Excellence, particularly in the first 12, 18 months, was access to intellectual resources. And finally, at the bottom, have always been cognizant of not wanting to develop a National Library of New Zealand solution. Whatever we do in our work has to be more broadly applicable across the wider preservation community. So again, it's trying to think of digital preservation as a more broadly based community kind of activity. So this is why national libraries do this. Because a national library is a place where a nation nourishes its memory and exerts its imagination, where it connects with its past and invents its future. So this is kind of the social idea of what national libraries have done, have been mandated to do for centuries. And now we're being asked to do exactly the same kind of work, but in the digital space. So where we normally understood what it was that we had to do with the analog, we don't understand what we have to do with the digital. And so this is what digital preservation is all about from a National Library perspective. This is a quote from a paper by Garrett and Waters in 1996. It's probably the first piece of writing that dealt thoughtfully with digital preservation. And again, it's a very nice quote, I think, because it deals not only with the fact that it's a problem of fine-tuning a narrow set of technical variables. It is not a clearly defined problem. It will never be a clearly defined problem because what's happening in the digital realm happens so quickly that our ability to follow it from a preservation perspective, we will always only be catching up. And it is a grander problem, rather than a technological problem, of organizing ourselves over time and as a society, to maneuver effectively in a digital landscape. I think that one quote really, really encapsulates all of the components of the thinking about digital preservation, right from the creation of an object through to its bringing into our institutions, the managing of it within our institutions, and then putting it out into the permanent repository and the various storage components that are going to be required going forwards. So this is a fairly rough schematic of how we think about digital preservation. Clearly, we have the back end. What we need is the infrastructure, the storage, the mechanics of holding digital objects. We also have what we call the psychology of digital preservation, which is the stuff around provenance, context, authenticity, integrity, all of those kinds of issues. And those are the sort of things that I'll be talking about that we think we've been dealing with in the work that we've been doing on our NDHA project over the last 3 or 4 years. The third component is around risk management, planning, migration, emulation. So this is the research component of preservation strategies. What are we actually going to do with these objects now that we've got them in our organizations? What are the mechanical processes that we're going to put in place to ensure that we can take those objects through time in a manner that keeps them meaningful and renderable? Just at the bottom there, I've added a couple of lines. One of the things that I think is deeply troubling about digital preservation at the moment is that we don't know what we're talking about. We don't have a set of requirements that actually articulates what digital preservation is. And I think this is important for a number of reasons. I'll give you a couple of examples. One example is, if we have the requirements, we have an agreed set of requirements that the community signs up to, then we know what it is that we want to implement. Then we know what it is that we want a developer or a systems integrator or whatever, what it is that we want them to do for us if we have those requirements. At the moment, we don't have those requirements, and we get a lot of talk about repositories, data archiving, digital archiving, data curation, data life cycles, et cetera, which all seem to be in some ways lacking clarity for moving forwards in digital preservation. And the second thing around the requirements layer is there's a lot of work going into auditing, developing auditing systems and certification systems for digital preservation activities, but what are they auditing and what are they certifying if we don't actually have that set of requirements for them to come back to? So I think we've got some problems there just at the requirements level. So this is our goal. The mandate is to collect, make accessible, preserve in perpetuity, a lovely English phrase meaning forever. We don't have any naivety about actually being able to protect stuff forever, but it's an issue of you need the ideal, or institutions like National Libraries, Archives, Museums, etc. need to at least have that ideal that they're wanting to achieve towards. So New Zealand's digital heritage. I'll just take my watch off so I know what I'm doing. We have a partnership with Ex Libris on the software side and Sun Microsystems on the hardware side, and we were very clear that this is partly managed to manage the notion that we weren't able to do this by ourselves, and it wasn't something that we could build effectively without these partners. OIES basis, I mean, fairly simple thing. That's a more complex version of the same stuff, and this is how we sort of reflect it back into the National Library of New Zealand. So you can see on the left-hand side we have staff mediation, so there's a lot of high-process material that comes through. We have some much less processed material that comes through our digitization programs. We have sound preservation, web archiving. And so there's your inputs. We make no prescription related to formats or object types or anything like that. We think it's too soon in our understanding of preservation to be making those kinds of prescriptive choices. And through the center, we have a deposit area that has its own storage layer, a staging area, which is effectively working space, which also has its own storage area, permanent repository, etc., and then out the front end, the various publishing and delivery processes that you... Sorry, yes. Slow So we have the publishing and delivery out on the right-hand side. Tapui is our unpublished materials, our archival materials, library management systems, various other resource discovery applications, and other rendering and delivery processes. And underpinning it all, we have a number of administrative and common services routines around event monitoring, archive storage, working storage, disaster recovery, reporting, etc., etc. So, Art mentioned this morning around access management, and one of the things that we've been trying to think of at this end of the process, this delivery end of the process, if we've got an exponentially increasing amount of data that we're providing access to our range of communities, how can we do that in a meaningful sort of way? How do we actually carve up these data centers and these huge quantums of data in a manner that's useful for our users? And so we're finding that we're having to think quite deeply about what identity and access means and how we actually put those sorts of services across the corpus of the data that we're going to have. We just, as I said, we went for a commercial decision. We wanted something that would last beyond the National Library of New Zealand, that would have a level of continuity and enhancements processes. We looked at open source. We looked at things like Fedora, DSpace, iTor, Adore, etc. They tended not, well, from our perspective, they did not meet our requirements for a digital preservation system. We have incorporated a number of open source tools like Jove and Droid and Pronom, National Library metadata extract tool. We have a real problem with those things actually not working, and this is another issue that the digital preservation community needs to confront, and I think Yonif will be talking more about this in the next presentation. These things actually don't work, so an issue there. We had a very long-running proprietary versus open source conversation, at the end of which we decided that was a religious conversation, and it had no bearing on the choices that we were trying to make as an institution. But it was much more important that we look at what the required institutional outcome is, because if you make an open source decision up front, or you make a proprietary decision up front, you've already narrowed down the field of possibilities in terms of getting the right institutional outcome. So we have a generic software solution, broad-ranging digital preservation solution. The National Digital Heritage Archive is what we call it, which is the implementation of digital preservation that goes around the software and hardware solution. So how do you actually make digital preservation work in your business? The number of work streams over the last 3 or 4 years, business change has been ongoing, requirements management is ongoing, and then the development, testing, and regression and ongoing delivery for there. I'm starting to race now because I can see my time going. The chief executive at some stage said that no job will be unchanged, so there's a message from the institution that digital is actually going to be more important in our institutions than what we normally did in the paper world. An enormous amount of problems here. We don't have the right people, and the schools aren't delivering us the right people. Then, so we need a different kind of way of looking at how we produce staff to run digital libraries and the types of skills that we actually want for that. Libraries and archives traditionally have counted widgets, so we cataloged 700 of these, or we indexed 1,000 of those. In the new world of digital, of the data centers and the data corpus, we're trying to look at more outcome-focused reporting. So in the same way that we want to carve up our corpus in a manner that allows more discrete or more granular access, we also want to be able to monitor that access more at a more granular level, so that we can understand more deeply how we are actually impacting on the user groups that are interested in the material that we've got in our archive. So this is what we have at day one. I won't go through all of these, the presentations we've made available, but I will say about a couple of them, the producers are very important. Are there any archivists here today? Excellent. We have an archivist. One of the things that we've been noticing when we're starting to look at digital preservation is that a lot of archival principles, such as provenance, context, chain of custody, some of these ideas are really, really important in digital preservation in a way that they haven't been normally to librarians. And it's taking a long time for the library community to, I think, to look really carefully at some of those archival principles and to bring them into this process. And of course, one of those is that you need to get as close to the point of production as possible. So from our perspective as a national library, that point of production could be one of our normal publishers, or it could be an individual New Zealand citizen who wants to deposit some material into the National Digital Heritage Archive. So you have this huge range of possibilities of who your producers and who your depositors might be. Another example of how the archival stuff starts to influence how we're thinking is down here. We have this AAA group of people, assessor, approver, arranger. Their jobs are to take material in and to do effectively archival stuff around appraisal, selection, arrangement, and description, and things like that, which we need to do because we won't be necessarily taking everything that's actually deposited with us. I'm going to talk a little bit about this Go API. Clearly, most of the stuff here is around the pointy end of the spectrum. It's around the more difficult stuff. Our digitization program, large batch material, all of that stuff just happens naturally within the system. It's the finessing of the processes for the more difficult material that is actually where the complexity is in implementing digital preservation. Let's move on. So it isn't all about the software. There's a huge amount of integration that's required as well. And part of the reason for this is when we were working with Ex Libris, we had to have the conversation of do we build in National Library of New Zealand's requirements for ingest services or for delivery services, and thereby lock other customers into the same ingest processes and the same delivery processes. So the decision was that we would not bind in those ingest and delivery processes, but the system comes with a full set of SDK, Access SDK and an ingest SDK and a full set of APIs so that organizations can build their own applications around the system itself. And those applications include deposit, delivery, collection management system integration. So, with our resource discovery systems and our collection management systems, we want bidirectional connectivity with the digital preservation system. So, an example of that is using the ingest SDK. We've built a tool called Indigo. Creates a submission information packet from whatever material you present to. Packages up the files, doesn't care whether they're simple, complex objects, creates a structure map, binds it all up in the METS wrapper, creates whatever derivatives are required for that particular object for delivery, does the fixity process, automatically runs the integration links back to the collection management system, automatically links back to the producer records, and then submits the whole SIP as a package into the NDHA. Now that process took less than 3 months to develop that system using the SDK that comes with the DPS. Just a few words on challenges. I've already mentioned requirements. Tom talked this morning about the born digital onslaught. I thought it was a really nice phrase. We have a tidal wave coming towards us. Particularly from the science area. The sheer quantity of material is going to overrun in the short term our ability to deal with it and our ability to understand it and to be able to put in place the research required to understand and deal with that material. We have a real problem with quality assurance tools. If we undertake a preservation strategy, what is there about the undertaking of that strategy that tells us it's been successful? if we do a migration, how do we know the migration's been successful? The tools that can actually do that measurement of what has happened to an object through a preservation strategy just aren't there. Now, it may seem slightly trivial in the context of text, but it will become less trivial when we get to be more engaged with audiovisual materials. Again, I talked about requirements and standards. Just an example about the size. I thought there was a thing called yottabytes that come before zettabytes, but I'm not entirely sure. But BBC are talking about petabytes per week. The CERN LHC, which was turned on and then turned off again, nobody knows what sort of quantity of data is going to come out of there. And then we have a lot of legacy problems, the sheer complexity of bringing across our physical carriers into an online environment. The CDs, engineering materials, CAD materials, gaming materials, and just working out what it is that we want to do with those things on an ongoing basis. So, a prognostication. Digital preservation will be at the heart of our business within the next 5 years, if not earlier. I think digital preservation is going, actually let me go back a little just to show. This here is a graphic from some work that was done by Berkeley University on two sets of data, 1999 data and 2002 data. And what it showed was that 92 or 93% of all original unique publishing is now online. So, and it also showed that our paper collecting is increasing by 35%, 40% per annum. So our normal business is going like this, but our new business is going almost like this. And within 5, 10, 15 years, the digital will be all we will be able to care about. And I think with one of the things about resources is how do we actually start to reallocate resources out of what we're doing at the moment into dealing with this deluge of material that's going to come. Hopefully we will have that agreed lexicon so that we know what we mean when we talk about digital preservation. We'll have the capacity and capability to do it. We'll have the tools to support us. We'll have a professional services market. At the moment, who do you go to for services and for support in a digital preservation? You don't go to anybody because there's nobody there who either knows enough or is in a position to provide those types of services for us. We will have a much more coordinated research agenda. And I think what Tom was alluding this morning, I think, to the real need to generate a digital preservation community so that there's not these ad hoc bits and pieces going on all over the place, often either reinventing the wheel or possibly doing stuff that's not necessarily the most important stuff in the preservation arena. And I think within 5 to 10 years, we'll see digital preservation will be a component of a national knowledge infrastructure. If you look at what's happened to in the light of company failures like Enron and WorldCom and the Sarbanes-Oxley legislation in the United States, which resulted from that, the compliance cost on institutions and organizations is going to continue to grow. How we actually deal with this stuff at a national level will also become part of the discussion. So that's what I thought, I hope, that I've talked about in 30 minutes. And what we say we've got is around 80% of that at the moment. We hope that when we have phase two delivered in the end of this year, we're looking to have about 90% of that. And we already, we have a fully functioning NDHA at this stage. So again, just another reminder about why we do this. This is Marcus Garvey. He was a black activist in early 20th century US, Africa for the Africans movement, that kind of stuff. He said that a people without knowledge of its past is like a tree without roots. So again, these are the kinds of things that drive what the National Library of New Zealand is trying to do with digital preservation. Thank you.